we're headed to the Pacific Northwest to learn about a nonprofit offering help to people in crisis that is an alternative to calling the police in Eugene, Oregon. It is an hour-long conversation here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The organization is called CAHOOTS. It stands for Crisis Assistance Helping Out on the Streets. U.S. Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon introduced new national legislation this month that is modeled after CAHOOTS, emphasizing a healthcare response instead of a police response to mental health and substance abuse 911 calls. Do you think it's a good idea to fund unarmed crisis intervention teams to respond to people in crisis? Are you worried about crime in your neighborhood, or are you more afraid to call the police? Join in at 800-642-1234. Ebony Morgan is a crisis intervention worker for CAHOOTS. Ebony, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me and for wanting to talk about CAHOOTS this morning.
Yeah, we also have Tim Black, your colleague, director of consulting at Whitebird Clinic in Eugene, which runs the CAHOOTS. Tim, welcome to you.
Good morning, Kate.
Well, Tim, let's get started here. What does CAHOOTS do? Help us understand it.
So CAHOOTS is a mobile crisis program. We're one arm of the, kind of full spectrum of crisis services that are offered at Whitebird Clinic. The CAHOOTS program, which, as you said, stands for Crisis Assistance Helping Out on the Street, is a mobile crisis response that's requested and dispatched by non-emergency public safety. We respond to a wide variety of interventions ranging from, behavioral health counseling for suicidal ideation or, variety of other crises. We also do a lot of resource referral and connection for folks who are trying to meet basic needs. And really then all manner of social service responses that are, being requested through our public safety system and, for whom, the CAHOOTS team is the right kind of first response. Only about half of the population that we serve is unhoused. So there's a lot of work that we're doing in homes, in a variety of different residential settings. The CAHOOTS program is really intended to be there as an alternative to traditional public safety, alternative to police response, an alternative to fire and EMS for a broad set of situations where the need isn't some sort of medical emergency or some kind, there's not some kind of crime being committed, but, there's an unmet need. There's somebody who's experiencing a crisis out in the community, and they deserve to have the right kind of first responders show up when they're in that crisis.
Are you responding to these calls day and night?
Yeah, we're a 24/7 service, so we never take time off. We have teams responding all night long. Eugene-Springfield metro area is about 250,000 people, so we have two vans that run through the night, and then during the day when we when everybody's awake, when we just see a lot more demand for our services, we have a third van that comes into service as well.
Ebony, how have you approached crisis intervention during the pandemic? Because I would imagine that this intervention involves you being closer to someone, talking with them, and trying to help. And so how have you had to adjust in the pandemic?
It's required some flexibility and adaptability. We wear masks all the time now and proper PPE, which can make it a little more tricky to do the client-centered sort of therapeutic communication that we're used to, kneeling down and getting close to someone's level. And a lot of times we're considering spacing and how to make sure we're limiting other people's exposure, our own exposure. So it's changed the way that we do some things, but really fundamentally our goal is the same. It is to help people through a crisis, and this is a shared crisis. So it's added some components to our work as well, like being able to acknowledge the humanity of this experience and that we're all kind of going through this together. And of course there are extra stressors, and of course people are, having exacerbations of mental health or medical health conditions just based on a different sort of system and accessibility for their care. So we have some opportunity to really support our community through something difficult. We just try to be really mindful of not worsening the pandemic, right?
We're talking with Ebony Morgan, who is one of Kahoot's crisis intervention workers. Tim Black is director of consulting at Whitebird Clinic in Eugene, Oregon, which runs the Kahoot's. It's a program offering assistance to people in crisis, an alternative to calling the police. You can join in with your questions about Kahoot's and maybe an operation that you have in your neighborhood for crisis intervention. We're at 800-642-1234. Tim, who decides when to call a Kahoot's team? How does that work?
Yeah, so anybody in the community can request Kahoot's services. You know, we don't need it to be the specific individual that's in crisis to make that request. A lot of the calls for service that Kahoot's receives are from third parties, either, you know, because somebody's worried about their neighbor, a family member, or a friend if they're out of state. But even, you know, folks that are, you know, just passing through our community who are witnessing a crisis unfold are able to access our services. You know, the reason that Kahoot's utilizes the existing non-emergency public safety line is because we want to be plugged into that larger system. You know, we know that out in the community, there are a lot of folks who are going to be more likely to reach out to the police because they come from communities where that's a safe resource for them when they're in a time of need. There are other folks who might only be able to access public safety through 911. And so by being part of that same comm system of the police and fire department, you know, we're able to capture a pretty broad cross-section of the calls that are coming through our community for, you know, situations that folks are experiencing. And it's, you know, that's really, I think, one of the biggest successes of our program is that we've utilizing this police dispatch, you know, by utilizing that public safety infrastructure. You know, Kahoot's is able to have a, you know, really strong presence in our community.
Is it common for a 911 operator dispatcher to transfer a call over to Kahoot's? How would that work?
Yeah, so, you know, Kahoot's is utilized just like any other public safety resource. Our teams wear a police radio. We operate on priority police channels. And, you know, when a Kahoot's response team goes on to shift, you know, they get in that van and they're going to be responding to, you know, call after call after call without really any sort of downtime. So, you know, the call comes in, the crisis occurs out in the community, a call comes into our comm center, and then that team is dispatched just like a police unit would be to a bank robbery. You know, it's a really streamlined process, and it's through a really in-depth scope of work in our service contract with our partners in Eugene and Springfield that allows us to have you know, such a dynamic and such a responsive program.
Ebony, what types of situations have you responded to?
We respond to all kinds of situations. We go on a lot of welfare checks. We do some mediation and, as Tim was talking about, some of that referral and resource support where we are connecting people with appropriate resources that are good for them. We had just the other day, I responded to somebody who was feeling very, very anxious. And so they called Kahoot's for some counseling around that. And so we got there and checked in and touched base and found that maybe some of that anxiety was rooted in a medical situation and checked their vital signs because we have an EMT and a crisis worker. And when the vital signs were a little concerning, we were able to contact for fire and EMS to come out and evaluate and transport that person to the hospital as necessary because they weren't stable enough to ride with us. So we can do a lot of things, including kind of triage another need if that's necessary, but oftentimes we're able to just handle situations ourselves.
We're learning about Kahoot's with Tim Black from Whitebird Clinic and Ebony Morgan. They are one of Kahoot's crisis intervention workers. The program has existed in the Eugene, Oregon area for 30 years, and it's designed to send out crisis response teams to mental health needs instead of police. How should police be dealing with mentally ill people in crisis? Should law enforcement be responsible for dealing with nonviolent people in crisis? Join in with your thoughts, your experiences to the table, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Ebony Morgan and Tim Black here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're learning about a program called CAHOOTS here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It stands for Crisis Assistance Helping Out on the Streets. And last week, a Democratic U.S. Senator from Oregon introduced the National CAHOOTS Act, which is modeled after the unarmed crisis response team that's operated in the Eugene, Oregon area for decades. Should police departments have funding diverted to staff unarmed crisis teams? Should law enforcement be first on the scene in mental health crisis calls? What benefits and pitfalls do you see in a CAHOOTS model? Join in to discuss 800-642-1234. Ebony Morgan is a crisis intervention worker at CAHOOTS. It's a mobile crisis response team. Tim Black is consulting director at Whitebird Clinic in Oregon, which runs CAHOOTS, and they stay with us. We heard from Julie in Minneapolis, called in, couldn't stay with us. And Julie says that they belong to a grief support group. And Julie shared that at least two parents have lost sons because they called the police and the police shot their sons. And Julie says calling the police should be a last resort. Tim, what are your thoughts on Julie's experience?
My heart goes out to Julie and her peers. Losing a child is one of the hardest things anybody can experience. I think what that brings up is a recognition that, you know, in so many communities across the U.S., we are looking to, you know, the police to be responding to situations that they're not trained to handle, situations that they don't even want to be going to. In particular, you know, when folks are in a crisis, and the response they get is that uniformed officer with that badge and that gun, those means to escalate force, you know, the sheer fact that those weapons are on scene means that violence is much more likely to occur. The key difference between that type of response and what CAHOOTS offers is that the response team that's going out is an unarmed civilian team. We don't have this obligation of enforcement. We have the luxury of 500 hours of field training and up to 40 hours of class time that is all spent on learning how to provide therapeutic interventions. And you compare that to an officer getting at best 40 hours of crisis training in the form of that CIT course. And that CIT course is really about hostage negotiation, about really extreme situations. And with a CAHOOTS type program, there's one opportunity to have an intervention before things escalate, before things get to the point where the police are the only viable option for something because of how escalated it's gotten. But really, you know, about who it is that's going out on these calls, you know, and what kind of response patients are receiving, what kind of response people are in the community, what they're getting when that CAHOOTS van shows up as opposed to police.
Ebony, what brought you to this work?
It was kind of there's multiple factors, but really a draw to public and community health helps me stay motivated about it and really want to share it. I think that what drew me to it in the first place the most was the loss of my own father during a police encounter. So when I hear about comments like Julie's and people in the community that have also experienced that family loss, it reminds me what inspired me to start this and join this program in the first place. I think that having that alternative option when that armed response isn't necessary is something that seems kind of radical to people, but is actually, in our community at least, has proven to be effective and appropriate. And I think that, as Tim was touching on, having that unarmed response and the rapport and trust that we've built in the community can really help us get the most constructive resolution to a situation that we're able to that doesn't end in violence. And I appreciate that about the work that I do significantly. So I take this work really seriously, and so do all of my peers. And I think that that's what drew me to it and really motivates me to do it to the best of my ability.
I'm sorry to hear about your father. I'm wondering, you talk about rapport and trust. Do you go on repeat calls to the same individuals or to the same circumstances involving a particular place or home?
We do. There are some clients that we see once and that's all that they need, and we're able to support them in that way. And there are some clients we see a lot of times and we support them through accessing the necessary services to do whatever it is that they need. Some people call us on more frequent or less frequent bases, but we are available to everyone in the community in their time of crisis. And how often you have a crisis is not up to us. So I think that that's where some of that trust and rapport comes from. And otherwise, I think it's word of mouth. And I think that people in the community at this point, after the over 31 years, have learned that we are available and what our services are. And that there's that trust that's shared that when we come on scene, we're there to help and be that kind of social services support. So I think some of that trust is from the nature of our work, and some of that is from repeat visits and building that rapport over time.
We're talking with Ebony Morgan, who is a crisis intervention worker at CAHOOTS. It's a mobile crisis response team operating in Eugene, Oregon. Tim Black is here as well, director of consulting at Whitebird Clinic, which runs CAHOOTS. You can join in with your questions, your situations, and how you might see CAHOOTS operating in your own community. Join in at 800-642-1234. Ebony, you know, I would imagine that when you do have a repeat call to someone you've talked with before, talk them through a crisis situation, you learn more about them each time, and that might actually help you in your ability to help them.
Oh, absolutely. And we are not always, you know, it's not always going to be the same team that responds, because we do rotate out, but we keep notes and records secured for ourselves. They're internal, and we can check on the way. If we get sent to an address, we can see if we've been there before and maybe what was effective. And so going in, we can see that the last team that responded found that this person really had a traumatic experience at the hospital and doesn't want to go there. And that helps us with our rapport on the scene, because we know that that is not something that they want to do. And if it's appropriate, then we're going to have to talk about that in a careful way. So it gives us that heads up, and that being able to kind of go in with an open mind, but also with relevant information, allows us to be more efficient in our work and also more trauma-informed. If someone has had any kind of trauma in their past, we want to make sure that we're careful about that, and being able to have multiple visits lets us know where that might live and how we can be careful with that.
Tim, help us understand a little bit more the training that CAHOOTS workers are getting as they get ready to be an intervention worker, as they join the team. What is that training like? What are the backgrounds of the people?
Yeah, so for both our crisis workers and our EMTs, we want to see that folks that are coming into the CAHOOTS team are coming with relevant experience and education that is going to make them successful in the work. So, past work in, shelters or on crisis lines, any number of experiences in human services and mental health. But regardless of the background that you come in with, we really need to teach you the CAHOOTS way of responding. And so that 500 hours of field training that I mentioned, that's an average. You know, each individual is going to have a unique experience. But that process starts by being an observer, a third member of the response team, and then slowly, incrementally, joining the responses, contributing to the interventions, and until the point where you're able to really, successfully from start to finish, lead a call and communicate with dispatch over the radio. To set folks up for success in that process, we try to make sure that they have a mentor assigned to them, somebody who can be there for that one-on-one feedback, processing the experiences. This is hard work. We are out there as first responders. There's an inherent trauma, and we want folks to feel supported through that process. And to really make sure that, someone's supported, that in addition to that mentor and the experiences that they have in that field training, we want to really, have an opportunity to go over the nuts and bolts of the work. And so that's why there's up to 40 hours of class time that folks will go through, where we're really working on things like, how do you use that public safety radio that we've been granted use of? What are these assessment tools that we're going to be employing out in the field? But I think the biggest focus in our training is really on recognizing, the experiences of others. And that takes the form of scene safety and situational awareness, but also just really, a recognition that the individuals that we're working with are the experts in their experience. It's our obligation to really listen to that experience, to listen to what that person is going through, and then work with them to identify how we can best support and stabilize them while still really only providing the least intervention necessary. You know, that training process is really designed to empower that individual, you know, and to really do everything we can to, you know, support their process rather than inflicting care or having an attachment to outcome when we're, you know, out talking with you in the community.
I wonder, have you changed the preparation and the training at all as you adjust to the needs of the community?
You know, yeah, and we've always tried to make sure that the CAHOOTS program is really responsive and resilient. And in this present moment, the best way that we've identified to support the community is by really spending a lot more time, you know, doing our own work, you know, really making sure that the services that we're providing are responsive to our community, you know, and that we're doing everything we can to eliminate bias and improve accessibility with the services that we have.
Tim Black is Director of Consulting at Whitebird Clinic, which runs CAHOOTS. Ebony Morgan here as well, Crisis Intervention Worker at CAHOOTS. You can join in. How do you see the role of a CAHOOTS operating in your community? Time to talk, 800-642-1234. We'll be back to talk more right after this news update on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're exploring a nonprofit in the Pacific Northwest that runs a program dispatching crisis response teams to mental health calls instead of police. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. There is federal legislation afoot called the CAHOOTS Act that would provide funding to other states to create their own crisis response teams from Medicaid funds. Wraparound care is a big focus of the CAHOOTS model. Do you think people in a mental health crisis are adequately connected to services and follow-up care? Do you work in crisis intervention? How should wraparound care be funded? How do you evaluate outcomes? It's 800-642-1234. Tim Black is consulting director at Whitebird Clinic in Eugene, Oregon, the clinic that runs CAHOOTS. And Ebony Morgan is one of the program's crisis intervention workers, and they stay with us. Let's take a call now. Julie is joining us from Bayfield. Hi, Julie.
Hi there.
Hi, go ahead.
I was calling just to make kind of a comment. I was working in case management for a mental health and substance use rehabilitation program, and what I was working on with some of the clients that opted in was kind of a community-wide safety plan. So I would write the safety plan with the client and figure out, you know, what triggered them, what helped them in a crisis. And then what we were trying to do was get that safety plan shared with local law enforcement. So it created a flag on the person's account if for some reason they interacted with law enforcement when they were symptomatic. The law enforcement officer would have a flag on the account to see that they were, you know, involved with this program, and then they could get a copy of their safety plan seeing, you know, what the person actually had said would kind of de-escalate them.
Yeah, it would give more context to the situation. And I'm wondering, Tim, do you see these safety plans operating at all where you are?
Yeah, so, you know, what's being discussed here sounds similar to the LEADS model that was started in Seattle, and that's the law enforcement assisted diversion system. You know, in Eugene and Springfield, we don't use LEADS, but we do have really robust partnerships with our local community service partners. You know, and we utilize releases of information, business agreements, memorandums of understanding, so that we can maintain a really collaborative and confidential atmosphere, so that when we, you know, are looking at more complex cases with our partners in the community, we're able to develop these really robust safety plans like what the caller, you know, just described. You know, and you know, we're always looking at ways that we can better utilize technology, that we can better utilize information to really make sure that what Cahoots is doing is responsive, you know, again, to the community and to the individuals that we're out there to serve.
And at the same time, too, protecting their private information. I mean, as you work with so many different partners, that, too, dealing with that health information is a, certainly another issue.
Absolutely. You know, and I can't ever say enough, you know, that Cahoots is a free, voluntary, and confidential service. You know, we are abiding by HIPAA regulations, and we are, you know, mandatory reporters. So there are certain things that we are going to have to report, and those are all really about maintaining the safety and well-being of the community.
Well, let's take another call now. Deb is joining us from northern Wisconsin. Good morning, Deb.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
I have a sister. I live in northern Wisconsin that's had a lot of mental health issues, and most recently has had the police involved, and it's been very difficult because not all of them have the compassion necessary to handle the situations. So we're hoping that something changes so that we have more compassionate people to be able to help our people that are stricken with mental health issues. And once they end up in the system, it's like they go to court, they get released, they don't get the follow-up care that's really required to help these people get out of their situation. I'll take any comments off the air.
Deb, thank you for that. Ebony, I want to start with you about the compassion that you have to have in this work and making sure that wraparound care is there.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that input, Deb. And I think that compassion piece is so crucial, and how that, some of the ways that shows up for us is in the way we're trained to consider medical and mental health components from the onset of our intervention. So when we arrive on a scene, we don't automatically assume that anything, really. And so if it seems like there's a mental health component and we're trained to do some rapid mental health assessments, we can adjust for that and make sure that we are accommodating appropriately to whatever the client will find the most therapeutic. And throughout the intervention, we can adapt our approach to help make sure that the client feels safe and feels supported. And then rather than pretending like we know what's best for someone else, our role is to help this person come up with what would feel supportive for them and what the next step should be. And when you have that buy-in from the client into the next step of the plan, it's a lot more likely to be successful. And from there, you know, we're immediate crisis intervention. So we're not necessarily going to be in a position to follow up and make sure that you're connected with all of these pieces. But say that we transport to a local crisis center, we can make sure that we articulate what the longer term plan is and try to help that become fruitful for the client and get those results that they're hoping for. So there's a variety of ways that we try to be really compassionate and client-centered and make sure that we aren't trying to enforce anything on anyone, but rather we're just helping the situation kind of de-escalate and find a resolution that will be the most beneficial for the person that we're responding to. So that compassion piece is really very important.
Tim, I want you to respond as well, but curious, are the people in crisis usually transported somewhere?
No, you know, most of the time we're able to resolve these calls on scene. And that means that, you know, when somebody is in crisis, and reaching out to Cahoots, that they don't need to be considering, you know, the potential for displacement. You know, if they're unhoused and have finally found a place that feels safe and familiar, you know, to be able to get a thing we all take for granted called sleep, the last thing we want to do is remove somebody from that situation if we can avoid it. You know, and so we're always trying to look to see what is it that we can do here where we are, you know, and that's why I think, as Ebony mentioned earlier, you know, the obligation of Cahoots is really to meet you where you're at. And that's literally and metaphorically. You know, we want to be able to resolve with what you have at your disposal so that we can work with you to build those skills. The next time that crisis occurs, the next time you experience that trigger, you know, maybe you'll be either, you know, recognizing what's going on and able to call us a little sooner. So before things get to a 10, maybe you're calling us at a 7. But, you know, additionally, maybe we can get to the point where, you know, you're able to use some self-soothing techniques and follow a plan that we've, you know, supported you developing to be able to address that trigger and respond without, you know, eventually needing to call that mobile crisis response. And on that topic of, you know, compassionate response and who are those first responders, we're hearing from you know, patrol officers, you know, watch commanders, supervisors, even presidents, leadership in policing, and saying that officers don't want to be responding to mental health calls. You know, officers aren't joining police departments because they want to be social workers. And so when we're looking at, you know, this idea of who these responders are, Ebony is a prime example of how, you know, the folks that are working for CAHOOTS and similar programs are so driven and called to this work, you know, that we're coming from this place of compassion. I mean, just listen to Ebony talk about the interactions with patients, you know, that is such a stark difference from, you know, what most folks experience when they interact with officers.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Tim Black, Director of Consulting at Whitebird Clinic, which runs the CAHOOTS program. Ebony Morgan is here, a crisis intervention worker at CAHOOTS, which is a program based in Eugene, Oregon, designed to be an alternative to calling the police. Taking your questions at 800-642-1234. Tim, help us understand where you get your funding and how that looks to be able to run CAHOOTS.
Yeah, so the total operating cost of the CAHOOTS program in Eugene and Springfield comes out to right around $2.5 million. Most of that operational expense is you know, the labor and what it takes to actually, you know, staff the vans and have them equipped to be able to respond out in the community. But that cost also covers more indirect resources like our fuel, maintenance of the vans, which are all publicly owned fleet vehicles. But then also, you know, our utilization of that public safety system. Almost all of our funding is municipal. In Eugene, where we've been operating since the 4th of July, 1989, we're funded entirely by the city budget. So that process is city council approves, you know, X amount of dollars for mobile crisis response. That money is allocated to public safety. And because we're using the police dispatch system, we operate in collaboration with the Eugene Police Department to ensure that services are being delivered as they're identified in the contract. In Springfield, which is a smaller community just across the river from Eugene, we've only been able to find funding and serve over there for the last 5.5 years or so. In Springfield, because it's a, you know, smaller community, less financial resources, but also because CAHOOTS is still really kind of in its pilot phase, we're seeing a combination of city funds and a state grant to cover the rest. And that was, you know, really to even get our foot in the door in Springfield, we were able to procure 100% state funding for those resources in Springfield. And so, you know, what we're seeing now is an opportunity to really engage with communities across, you know, the country to really look at that model of municipal funding, you know, being allocated to behavioral health first response rather than just going to those traditional public safety resources and infrastructure.
When you run the numbers, is it cost effective versus calling the police?
Absolutely. You know, if we look at, let's look at CAHOOTS as a diversion resource. So in keeping folks out of the emergency room system and out of the criminal legal system, we estimate that we're saving our community up to $20 million a year. That's a 10-to-1 return on investment for every dollar spent on the CAHOOTS resources.
We're spending the hour learning about a program called CAHOOTS with Tim Black from the Whitebird Clinic that runs the program in the Pacific Northwest. It dispatches crisis intervention teams instead of police. We also have Ebony Morgan, who is an intervention worker. Still time for your questions and your situations. 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us here in the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Tim Black and Ebony Morgan. Tim's consulting director at Whitebird Clinic that operates CAHOOTS, and Ebony is one of the program's crisis intervention workers. CAHOOTS stands for Crisis Assistance Helping Out on the Streets, dispatching unarmed crisis response teams instead of police, based in Eugene, Oregon. Let's take another call now. Kevin is joining us from Dodge County. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, good morning. Let me turn my radio off. I'm sorry. I went from hold to you.
That's okay.
First to you folks out there doing this, I want to, you know, give you a salute. Now, as I have been listening to this, I've been listening to, you know, since the beginning, And the more that you guys talk about this and some callers, it's a very complex situation and how you have to balance all these different factors, you know. But so it's very, a lot of elements involved. My particular is how do you train in that 500 hours? You're responding unarmed, and I'm presuming, I could be wrong, that the majority of people involved in this type of compassionate work will be female. So if you have a 125, 30-pound female, and she's facing a 200-pound guy who's getting agitated, how do you prepare, you know, for self-defense?
Kevin, thank you. Tim, how do you train for defending yourselves?
So I think we need to start by looking at, you know, kind of language that we're talking about when we're discussing escalated situations. And when we start to get into this place of, you know, one person defending themselves against another, we're looking at a more adversarial relationship. So the safety of CAHOOTS responders starts by just an understanding that there's an inherent power dynamic that comes along with our privilege of being able to carry that police radio, of having, you know, these resources at our disposal. And when we're responding to somebody in crisis, we're responding because a need has gone unmet for that individual. Our specific de-escalation training starts by really looking at the environment. And as Ebony mentioned earlier, you know, what is it that's going on, you know, for that person holistically? We're not assuming any one outcome or even one, you know, specific diagnosis is what's at play when we start our interaction with somebody. We need to train our staff to be mindful of how weather, you know, and inclement conditions can impact how an intervention goes. We try to recognize what our presence in a space does to inform how somebody is responding to us. So this doesn't apply to me because I'm a short guy, but for our taller staff members, you know, can they crouch down or position themselves in such a way that their physical presence isn't as intimidating? Additionally, we've experienced that because of how we appear when we show up on scene, you know, we're wearing a t-shirt and jeans or a hoodie if it's cold out. You know, we're not wearing a traditional public safety uniform. We're not showing up on that scene with, you know, with that taser and that pepper spray, those resources that, you know, can escalate a scene just by being part of the response. You know, we generally see that folks are more likely to let their guard down because when they see us coming, they're not being triggered by, you know, their individual or their community's past negative experiences with law enforcement and public safety. You know, what they're receiving a compassionate response instead of a command presence. And generally, for folks who are familiar with our services, and as I said earlier, we're a voluntary resource. So when CAHOOTS shows up on scene, that individual in crisis, if they have an existing relationship with us, knows that their rights aren't going to be taken away just because they're having a bad day and somebody called, you know, to try and get them some help. And I think the final thing I'll say on that is that there is this, you know, this very persistent perception that folks who are experiencing behavioral health crises are inherently dangerous. And what we've experienced anecdotally on CAHOOTS is that when things do escalate physically, you know, when there is aggression, that generally that's more about, you know, alcohol intoxication than it is about any sort of, you know, pre-existing, you know, mental health symptom. And so, you know, when this perception of danger is really, you know, allowing us to, you know, put folks who are in crisis into a box, you know, and to other them rather than recognizing that, you know, we're dealing with folks who are, you know, sometimes having the worst day of their lives. And in communities where that response to that bad day is a police officer, if that individual has experienced or if members of their community have experienced adversity at the hands of that same police department, you know, what kind of response should we be expecting from that individual?
Ebony, would you like to add anything there?
Yeah, I think that I hear that concern, and it comes up. People bring that up pretty often, and I find that personally, because we are not armed and we are very intentionally non-threatening in our approach, we generally don't
we're not going to wind up having to fight our way out of a situation. Our training just prevents that. And ultimately, that we're intentionally unarmed. You know, we don't want to have that component for ourselves. And if somebody is reacting in an aggressive way, I just like to note that that's generally out of some kind of fear. And so helping people understand that they are safe and secure in their response, in our response, and that we are not there to hurt them is one of the best ways to prevent that from escalating further. So rather than someone, you know, maybe puffing up and trying to express that they're frustrated with us and we do that back at them, we can take that energy and say, okay, but let's get to the part where we get to help you. How do we do that? And I think people, just because they haven't seen it be effective, don't recognize how effective that can be.
They want to get to that part where they can feel better.
Right. And showing them that that exists and that opportunity is present and that we can help them do that is really, you're just changing the tone of the interaction. You're not letting it become this kind of aggressive thing that maybe they're expecting and or used to, but you're shifting that energy into, okay, you're clearly needing something. What can we figure out what that is?
We're talking with Ebony Morgan, who is one of the CAHOOTS crisis intervention workers. Tim Black is here as well with the CAHOOTS program in Eugene, Oregon. It's a program designed to be an alternative to calling the police. We heard from Tiffany in La Crosse, called, couldn't stay with us. Tiffany was listening and thought CAHOOTS sounded like a mobile crisis unit that they have going on in La Crosse, and the unit can be reached by calling 211. Tim, is CAHOOTS different from other mobile crisis units?
We are different and similar. I think that we're, you know, we're aligned with a lot of other mobile crisis resources in that desire to, you know, provide response to meet people where they're at. What sets the CAHOOTS program apart, in my experience, is both that addition of the EMT as part of the response. Like Ebony said, we're out there to treat the whole person. You know, there's a connection between physical and mental health, and in order to adequately respond, we want to be able to, you know, treat the whole person. But I think the other key difference is that implementation in the public safety system and that role as a first responder, you know, rather than utilizing a separate crisis number, you know, a separate, you know, line that folks have to remember on top of other public safety numbers, you know, and by being that first response, by being dispatched through that public safety system, you know, the CAHOOTS model is able to provide that intervention and that response a lot earlier in the crisis than you might see with other, you know, mobile crisis programs, maybe, you know, co-responders that are only showing up with law enforcement or only going out after a referral has occurred.
We only have a few moments left here. I'm wondering, though, how you feel about the CAHOOTS Act and federal legislation that is in the works.
Yeah, that was a surreal moment to find out that Senator Wyden was, you know, creating this thing called the CAHOOTS Act. We had done some work with the senator's office on the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act to answer questions and help them understand the model more. And so, you know, we're really honored by this recognition. And what I take away from that is just how valuable the hard work, you know, being done by Ebony and everybody else on the CAHOOTS team is day in and day out, you know, all night long.
Well, thank you both for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having us, Kate.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Tim Black is director of consulting at Whitebird Clinic in Eugene, Oregon, which runs the CAHOOTS program. Ebony Morgan, one of the CAHOOTS crisis intervention workers. Just ahead, it is On Point. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.